while Ardsdale Baptist Church brings you the Word of God with practicality and simplicity. As you listen to this message, we trust that it will equip and empower you to find and fulfill your purpose.
I'm sure by now you've noticed that this time of the year, particularly in this part of the world, it gets dark really quick. It gets dark by just after 4 o'clock. You know, the street lights come on, you get home and immediately you have to close the curtains before you turn the lights on. Well, unless you're one of those people who doesn't mind your curtains being open at night. I'm not on that list. I much prefer the business in my living room to stay in my living room. But it gets dark really quickly, and actually, let's face it, you know, some of you might have even left home by the time many of you leave home in the morning, it's still dark, isn't it? You leave home at 7 o'clock in the morning, you can't see a thing, the lights are still on. And you've left your curtains closed at night, you come back in the morning, you come back in the afternoon, they're still closed. It's that time of the year where you only need to open and close your curtains at weekends. But it's not just that time of the year where the curtains don't do as much work. It's also that time of the year where we celebrate Christmas. It's the Christmas season. And inevitably, at some point or another, one way or another, in one context or another, whether it's on TV or in person or in the West End of London or even down your street, I'm sure you'll have seen the lights on the buildings, lights on the trees. Talking about trees, for the first time, we decided to put up lights on the fig tree outside our house. I mean, we have a neighbor, and Brenda will know, is Brenda here? Brenda will know who I mean. We have a neighbor nearby who has some very lovely, professionally installed lighting around his house. And they're digital, and those lights do all sorts of wonderful things. We're like, "Woo! Look at that house!" You know, wonderful patterns. As they just, you know, and during the day you can't see any cables anywhere. Let me tell you, the lights that I put on the tree are not like that. Morning, noon, and night, you can see the string hanging everywhere. I just wrapped it on every twig and every branch. I put it up there in random order. I was like, yeah, this looks good. And at night, it looks wonderful. You're like, oh, that's pretty. Yeah, feel sorry for me the day I have to take it all down. So this time of the year, in fact, this time last year, we had this thing called the Shine Your Light Weekend. And the Shine Your Light is an initiative by a pastor friend who has preached here before, Pastor Jonathan Oluide. And Shine Your Light's an initiative where people right across the country were going out over the weekend to sing Christmas carols. Last year we had people in shopping centers, in streets, in community centers, in market squares. And last year there were 70,000 people that weekend doing Christmas carols. So the aim this year, the dream this year, was that they would have 100,000 people doing this. You know, the largest Christmas singing event, as it were. In fact, King Charles talked about it. He talked about it on Thursday night. And he said, you know, yes, he thinks it's a wonderful initiative. And, you know, Friday evening, 25 of us thereabouts, including children, went out as part of this, and we were doing Christmas carols out in the streets just there. We did some opposite the community center, and we even moved to Windy Corner just for an hour. And it was wonderful to shine the light of Christ in Pollard's Hill. And today's sermon is designed as an extension of that. It's also called Shine Your Light, and our text comes from Philippians 2, 12 to 18, which was just read for us. In this passage, Paul is talking to us about how we're supposed to live the Christian life, how we're meant to live as Christians. He said we should live with fear and trembling. Now, when Paul is talking about living with fear and trembling, he's not looking for people who are going to be, you know, shivering and quaking in front of God. That's not what he is talking about. He's talking about a legitimate fear, a legitimate reverence of God. And when we live our Christian life, we've got to do so with a healthy amount of holiness for who God is and who God is to us. That's what Paul is referring to when he talks about working out your salvation with fear and trembling. It's always to have that reverence, remembering that God is almighty. And he calls us to live this way. And when we live this way, we minimize pride. We minimize arrogance in our lives. We minimize self-righteousness, me, myself, and I, when we hold God first and live with that level of reverence for God. Now, Paul doesn't only call us to work out our salvation. He also reminds us in verse 13 of our text. He says, "It is God that works in you to will and act according to his purpose." In fact, the older translation says, according to his pleasure. If you read it in the King James or the New King James, according to his pleasure, according to his will for our lives. In other words, we should continually submit our every action to God so that he can work through us. You see, for example, if, you know, Jesus said it, scripture teaches us to love our enemies. When you're loving your enemies, God's using you to show love to your enemies. When you help someone, God is using you to help that person. God is working his will through us in that way. So are we meant to do good works as Christians? Absolutely. We are meant to do good works. It is Christ working in us. And sometimes we have to hold the balance of the two truths. You know, in some, on one hand, our own good works. On the other hand, God is working in us. God is working through us. And it's a balance that's been entrusted to us. It's a balance that Paul had to wrestle with. You know, the balance of his good works and God working through these works. You know, it's the balance that we have where God gives us freedom to do what we want, but God is all powerful and all sovereign. Think about that. God is all powerful and everything is within his control, but he gives us freedom. And it's a balance that he entrusts to us to work that out. So working out our salvation, allowing God to work in us, Paul says we need to live that way in the world around us. Verse 14, we heard it read, tells us to do everything without complaining, without grumbling, without murmuring. Do it with a good attitude. Yeah. Is simply what he's saying. And it's honestly, when you read the book of Ephesians, Philippians, those letters, Paul's, there's a theme of joy that runs through it. And the opposite of joy, one of the opposites of joy is grumbling. You really want to kill your joy? Grumble. You want to live a life that has no joy? Grumble. Complain. How many people here have ever complained? Okay, a few. The rest of you haven't? Come and see me after church. And you know, and sometimes you just, listen, I don't know about you. All of you sitting here looking holy. You know, sometimes I'm just in a bad mood. I don't want to talk to you. I just want to have a nap. You know, have you ever felt that way? Somebody said to me yesterday, "How are you, Pastor?" I said, "I want to have a nap." In the middle of this children's party and everybody, they were screaming, the balloons everywhere, children crashing into children, the music. I had to tell the DJ, "Sorry, could you bring it down a little?" I thought to myself, "Am I getting old? Am I getting old?" Most of you here know this. I used to be a nightclub DJ. I'm like, I had to check myself. I'm like, "What's happening to you? You got just little piece of children's music." And I'm like, "DJ, could you just bring, you know?" And sometimes I'm just like, "Have you ever been there? You just everybody just leave me alone." But if we are going to live for Christ, it must be out of joy, not out of complaining. And it's not the first time we see in the Bible, you know, people being told off, told don't grumble, don't murmur, don't complain. The children of Israel were famous for that. God would bless them, right? And they would have a little incident, a little thing would happen. Read the whole of the Old Testament, a little thing would happen. And immediately they would forget all the good things that happened. "Oh God, why hast thou forsaken us? Where is our God? Our enemies are round about. They're gonna this, they're gonna that." Oh guys, it's the same God, different day. And they forget that. They forget that God was good to them. Even sometimes when God was good to the children of Israel, they would complain. And we need to be careful not to serve God with an attitude of complaining. Because if we complain and we grumble continually, let me tell you this, it's actually a sign of an inward spiritual issue. Anybody that has an attitude, a continuous attitude of complaining and grumbling, an attitude where they just don't recognize good things going on, it's a sign of a deeper spiritual issue. It's not about that one thing that happened that day. There's more going on. And that's not the way that God wants us to live. So Paul draws this contrast between the world and the church. He then talks about us in this contrast. He talks as us about us as lights, lights to be allowed to shine, as shining lights, shining before the world. He begins to talk about the world, you know, he says the world is crooked. He's talking about, you know, the world being warped. He's talking about this. I mean, this is you know, 2,000 years ago that Paul's talking about, you know, the world is crooked, the world is twisted, the world is warped. You know, the world's standards, you can't really trust the world's standards. This is 2,000 years ago. How much more in our own culture now? In our own culture. Sumi and I were privileged. We were honored to be invited to a carol service at Westminster Abbey. It was the Metropolitan Police Carol Service. And I was talking with, you know, one of the in fact, I was talking actually with the Commissioner of Police. And I said to him, I said, you know, he said, yeah, I said, you know, I see that you're trying to do some good work and you're trying to reframe the narrative around the police. And I said, well done. You know, I think London needs that. You know, there've been too many, it's too much bad news. He said, yeah, there've been some bad officers. There've been some, you know, bad eggs within. I said, hey, calm down. There are bad eggs everywhere. Social services, there are bad eggs. Education, there are bad eggs. I said, I'm a pastor. In the church, there are bad eggs. It's a sign of a fallen humanity. It's a sign of a world without Jesus. There are bad eggs. Yeah. And Paul is talking about that. You know, I don't have to spend too much time convincing you that the world that we live in now is filled with systems that go against God. Principles that don't align with God. In fact, some of them directly are anti-God. Yeah. Just look at the media. Look at the news. Open a newspaper. How many people here still read newspapers? Okay, you clearly travel on the tube, the free ones, isn't it? Metro. Those of you who read a newspaper, and I'm not talking in particular, even those who work for a newspaper, when was the last time you bought a newspaper? Go on then, hands up. Exactly, waiting for your free newspaper on the tube. And we see this stuff around us. And in a bid, in a means to address this, in verse 15 of our text, Paul says we should let our light shine in this dark world. The more darkness prevails, the more opportunity we have to let our light shine, to shine our light. Now, Paul writing here, what he's saying about letting light shine is not new. And we heard a little bit about it earlier in the service. Yeah, what Paul is doing is reinforcing something that Jesus said. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 16, Jesus said, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Let me help you again, and you heard it in the synopsis. So let your light shine, or as our sermon title says, shine your light. Shine your light. Let me do this. I want to do this. And those of you who are joining on PHBC Radio, I'm so sorry. You're not going to be able to see what I'm doing. I want to do something right here, right now. Illustrate a point to you. So what I'm doing, some of you are wondering, does anybody know what it could you understand? Do you see what I'm doing? Any guesses? Anybody guess for a present what I'm doing for a prize? See, as soon as I said for a prize, immediately answers start coming. Making a mask. So, there you go. I've got my mask on, right? What did you say about my mask? Somebody here is criticizing my skills. I've got skills, electrifying, right? So, with this mask on, right? Here's my question. Because you don't know what idea I have, right? And I want you to listen very carefully to my question. Are you ready? Who am I? Who am I? Who do you see? Somebody said masked man. Let me hear. Sha, I can't hear you. Who do you see? Who's here? Who am I? What did you say? Somebody said Pastor Deji with a mask on. Somebody said Ku Klux Klan. May the Lord forgive you where you're sitting. And those of you online who are watching this and trying to say all sorts of stuff, don't put it in the chat. Somebody said M&S. Okay, fair enough. Somebody said Batman, Iron Man, Mask Man. Let me tell you the truth. As much as I may have put that mask on, every single one of you still knew who was preaching. You knew it was Pastor Digi. You absolutely, yeah, I put the mask on, but you knew it was me. Did you not? It's almost like I don't know. I mean, they don't do this anymore, but Superman. How many people ever used to watch Superman? I know someone who's an absolute nutcase fan of Superman, and we're talking the original, you know, what's his name, Christopher Reeves in the 1970s, that Superman. And isn't it amazing? Superman walks into a phone box, and the only thing that changes is he takes off his glasses. It's the same guy, people. At least Spider-Man, we get it. His face is covered. The Hulk, we get it. He's turned into a, you know. Iron Man, we get it. Wonder Woman's worse than Superman. Do you know? Oh yeah, okay, naming all the men. Okay, Wonder Woman, yes. Catwoman, yes. Okay, give me some more. Let me tell you something. I'm sorry, I'm gonna go there for a minute. I'm naming all the men. Usually it's the men that have something to prove. Yeah, usually it's the men that have something to prove, trying to show how super they are. The women are like, I've got this. You try that in my house. I'll put you right. Isn't that right, sisters? Yeah. You say, I'm a man. They say, listen, I get it. It's true. It's the men that usually have something to prove, trying to show that the muscles in your arm are as big as my waist. Ah. And it didn't matter that I was when I put that mask on, you knew it was me. And the truth of it is, every single one of us, at various times, for one reason or another, one excuse or another, one justification or another, we have all done what? Put a mask on. We do it. Some of you are wearing your masks right now. Of course, there are masks that are there for function and safety. So for example, like a surgeon's mask. Yeah, that's important. A welder's mask, that's important. A gas mask, those are important. But as I said, some of us are putting a mask on because we want to project an image. Some of us are trying to project how fierce we are so that people won't see our vulnerability. Some of us are pretending to be kind and gentle, meanwhile nurturing a fierce and a wicked spirit in our hearts. Poisonous attitude. So how about you? Do you wear a mask? What is the mask you're wearing? What is the mask you wear that you put on? What is that mask? What part of you do you prefer others not to know about? What parts of your life would you prefer, to just continue to pretend? I'm okay. Like Iron Man. The whole what's it, outfit is made of metal. And it's easy to forget that it's flesh and bones in there. And when you watch it on the movie, the man looks unbreakable. And then after the years went by, they realized, nah, we have to show his vulnerable side. I do like Marvel movies, having said all of that. I know there are a few Marvel fans here. I can see some smiles. I got a thumbs up. Just like me, when I was wearing that mask, there's actually a dictionary definition for this kind of behavior. And you'll be a little bit surprised to find out. It's called being a hypocrite. It's true. The word hypocrite comes from the Greek word hypokrisis, which means an actor. Someone who is acting, who is playing a part, who's portraying a different image. It means to play a part. It means to pretend. So a hypocrite, in Greek days, was someone who was an actor who played a part in a Greek drama. And usually when we talk about hypocrites and hypocrisy, we use those words in a negative sense to describe someone who's pretending to be virtuous, pretending to be righteous, when really they're not a righteous person. Jesus often talked about the Pharisees. He called them hypocrites because these guys love to stand and pray with all the pomp and pageantry in the temple. And they'd go to the street corners and pray where they had a nice big audience to hear their flowery words, and so that their holiness could be seen by everyone. Reminds me of us. Let me tell you this quick story. There was a couple. I heard about. These guys were madly in love. In fact, they weren't just in love. They were engaged. They were engaged to be married. However, there was a problem. This woman had a problem with her fiance. Because this guy was not very good with money. In fact, he was absolutely terrible with money. He would spend his money gambling. Every week he'd be buying lottery tickets. He wasn't good with money. She would complain and complain. They tried to get counseling. The guy wouldn't go to the counseling, you know. And she eventually had enough. And she told him she was leaving. So, you know what? I'm leaving. That's it. At the door, the guy asked her, you know, said, you know, do you love me? Do you still love me? And she replied that she's so disappointed. She doesn't even know what love is anymore. He begged her. He tried everything to get her to stay, but she left anyway. She said, listen, in fact, you know what? I'm convinced that you and I are not meant to be together. I've met somebody else and I want to give it a go. You know, I'm going to try it over there. The guy was on his own. He was heartbroken. He was alone. He was forlorn. After about 6 months or so, it was just about Christmas time, he got a letter from his ex-fiance. And the letter said, "Dear Johnny, no words could ever express the great unhappiness I have felt since I broke our engagement. I now realize that what I feel for you is true love. Please say you will take me back. No one could ever take your place in my heart. So please forgive me. I love you, I love you, I love you. Yours forever, Angelina. P.S. Congratulations on winning the lottery." Obviously, it's not a real, well, I hope it's not a real story. Of course, you would say there's something hypocritical about that kind of attitude, wouldn't you? In our scripture, we're challenged to be the light of the world. We're challenged to let our light shine, not be hypocrites. Let our light shine in our world for the sake of others, for the benefit of others. And we really must stop being hypocrites, people who pretend to be less than we are. We must humbly and unashamedly allow the light of Jesus to shine through us. The light we've received must shine through us from our lives. And there are two ways in which Jesus calls us to be the light. Number one, he says to be the light before others. As was said in the synopsis, our light should shine before others, not at others. It also says our light should shine without being, it's teaching our light should shine without being showy. To let let the focus of the light that's shining be on God, not on us, not on our performance. Our light should be pointing people, not annoying people. Have you ever been there where someone shone a light in your face? Have you ever had a light in your face? Isn't that annoying? Isn't that frustrating? Someone shines a light in your face, you're like, what are you doing? I can't even see where I'm going. The story is told of two university professors, and these men were very good friends. They journeyed together as friends. One was a devout Christian, the other one was an atheist. They liked to spend time together. They would talk, they would debate, they would discuss. They liked each other. The Christian often spoke to his friend about Christ and the things around Christianity. And he always sought to show the character of Christ in his relationship with his friend. He wasn't pushy. He wasn't trying to, you know, make the guy come to faith. No. He would just share it, you know. And he would respond humbly and honestly when his friend asked him questions and when his friend even challenged his belief. He would answer patiently. But at the same time, he continued to pray. He was faithfully praying for his friend because deep inside, he wanted his friend to come to know Christ as he knew Christ. Sadly, that didn't happen for him to see. The Christian professor died. He died. At his funeral, his friend, the other professor, attended. And after the sermon, as a result of what he heard in the sermon, he surrendered his heart to Christ. Did that Christian professor let his light shine? Yes. Was it for his benefit? No. It was for the benefit of the kingdom. Did the kingdom eventually benefit? Yes. So he did the right thing. Saints of God, in the same way, let your light shine before others, not at others. We sow the seed. We do our best to watch over it, to nurture it. But it is God that brings the increase. Now, when Jesus said, let your light shine before others, the follow-on point he made, he said, so that they will see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. That's the bit that says, don't let it be showy. Don't let it be about you. I've said these, I can't remember the last time I said my three words. No, six words actually, two lots of three. Do you know where I'm going to go? It's not about you. Oh, seven words. Get over yourself. It's not about you. Get over yourself. That's what Jesus is saying. Let your light shine so that people will glorify your Father in heaven. Now in Matthew 25, Jesus talks about when he comes back and he says, listen, this kingdom is going to be divided into two camps effectively. He's talking about those who served him and those who didn't serve him. Jesus said, I will say I was hungry. You gave me to eat. I was thirsty. You gave me something to drink. I was naked. You clothed me. I was a stranger. You took me in. I was sick and in prison. You came to visit me. And the people he was talking to say, Lord, we don't understand what you're talking about. When did we see you like this? When were you naked? When were you hungry? When were you sick? When were you in prison? I don't remember coming to visit you. And the Lord said, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, you did it to me. When we let our light shine for others, before others, we're doing it for Christ. Earlier on, I talked about hypocrisy, and I defined a hypocrite as a pretender or an actor, someone who pretends to be different from who they really are, someone who pretends to be better than they are. And it's usually in the area of morals and religion that we use the term hypocrite or hypocrisy. I'm sure you'll agree that one of the last things most of us wants to be called is a hypocrite. I certainly don't like ever being accused of being a hypocrite. We don't want anybody to criticize our Christianity. And because of that, sadly, because we don't want to be criticized for our Christianity, sadly, many of us keep our Christianity secret. We keep it as quiet as possible. Some of us in this room have people that know us, but they don't know that we're Christians. They absolutely know us, but we keep it quiet. I'm not saying go and preach at them, but share your own, like we saw in that video. Share your own testimony. When someone says, how are you? Oh, not too bad. Why would you answer with the negative? If you're not too bad, that means you're somewhat good. Why don't you say, I'm somewhat good? Why don't you say, I give thanks to God? Oh, because it'll make them uncomfortable? I could tell you of other religions who don't care how uncomfortable you are. They will answer with their faith. I could tell you other people who do that. And so some of us, because we don't want to be criticized, we minimize our faith, minimize our religion, minimize our belief because, you know, maybe it's better to, you know, to avoid being seen as part of God's army because we might be a target. So it's better for us to be like, you know, undercover, you know, God's undercover agents, you know, gospel James Bond, James Bond for Jesus, that kind of thing, ninjas, that nobody knows you're really a Christian. But here is the thing. If we don't make any public declaration that we are disciples of Jesus, no one can ever tell us, no one can ever criticize, will ever tell us we're not living up to that standard. So when I check your social media feed, when I look at your whole, I'm not saying, you know, some of us use social media for work, but when I check your whole social media feed, your whole internet profile, your whole LinkedIn profile, and there isn't one, oh, I thank God, even just those words, no mention of God and Jesus, I'm like, ooh, you're in the Secret Service, maybe. Is that the situation? Because let me ask you this. If it is hypocritical to make an outward profession of faith and not live up to it, is it not equally hypocritical to be a committed Christian and keep it a secret? Is it not equally hypocritical? Are you not pretending to be someone that you're not? Are you not acting as someone that you're not? PHBC family, we live in a world where darkness prevails. And you don't need to look far to see this. At the same time, in that darkness, our light, no matter how small it is, can be seen. I don't know how many of you have ever been on the ocean, been at sea, or been in a field camping at night, or been out of the city, where it is pitch black. Someone could light a match, half a mile away, and you would still see that flame. You would see that light. This is an opportunity for us to let our light shine. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, where you go, what you do, it's an opportunity to shine your light wherever you go, at work, in the shopping center, at school, on the bus, on the train, walking the streets, talking to your neighbor, in the car with a colleague, on a phone call with a friend, in a WhatsApp message or status message. You have an opportunity to shine your light for Jesus. The conditions that the Philippians faced were very similar to the conditions we face in our day today. It's an opportunity for our light to shine like the stars in a dark night. You don't have to be the biggest star, the largest star, the brightest star, but let your light shine. Paul felt the success of his own life intertwined with that of the Philippians. He said to them, how you live your life is going to make a difference. It's going to determine whether everything I did for you was for a good cause or was in vain. You see, what Paul was expressing to them, for the people of Philippi, is that, you know, is the same sort of thing I have in my heart for this church, for the people of Pollard's Hill. It is God's heart for us that we truly share the love of Jesus in our community. And just as it was for the people of Philippi, not just sharing it with our usual comfortable crew, you know, that same person that you send all those Christian memes to on Instagram. Send it to, oh, I touched something there. Send it to somebody else. Be part of this movement to see light of Christ shining. And when we do that, what we tell Jesus is, Lord, the price you paid, what it cost you, it was worth it. That's what we do. See, when Paul stands at the judgment seat before Christ, together with all the Philippians, together with you and me, receiving reward, and he'll hear Jesus say, well done, good and faithful servant. It's then that we know it was all truly worth it. And saints, we need to live shining our light before this dark generation. In this dark world, scary world, many people are looking, they're eagerly looking for light. We're looking for light in our society. No matter how small, no matter how dim, a light that is able to give them hope and a sense of security. So how can you help? What can you do? I want you to think about the people that you know or that you've encountered who maybe have lost loved ones. To them, shine your light. For the people who are struggling to make ends meet, where there's just too much month left at the end of their money, shine your light. For those who feel like they're at the end of their rope, they don't have any more rope left to climb, shine your light. For people who are questioning their worth, their value, their identity, shine your light. You and I are the mini, if I can use that phrase, versions of Jesus. Jesus, the light of the world. So let your light so shine before everyone around you that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven.
We trust that you've been blessed and believe that this message has brought you greater understanding. For more information or to follow up on what you've heard in this message, visit us on www.phbc.org.uk. God bless you.